It's Life and Taxes with Andrew Foster here on the TalkStation FM 107.1. And this afternoon, we have Andrew in the studio. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Lockwood.
So we're coming to the year end. I'm sure that's probably one of the topics of discussion today.
No doubt about it, Lockwood. We're through Thanksgiving now.
Yeah.
And we're we're steamrolling towards the Christmas season.
Yeah.
You know, and we've been getting a lot of calls. You know, it's kind of, well, you know, when you're an attorney, you have a lot of friends and family who pick up the cell phone, give you a text, mm-hmm. and say, "Hey, I just saw mom and dad, and I'm a little bit worried about things. And I think we need to talk about their estate planning documents." You know, and I think that this is a good time of year, Lockwood, to dust off those documents if you have them. If you do not have them, it's a great time to get an appointment scheduled with Harvell and Collins and come in and let's get those documents done because they're just so important. We'll go through each of the documents that we prepare in a basic estate plan and what role they serve and why they are so important.
Okay, and I'm going to say offer a thought on this. Of course, we're looking at two major active factors here. Number one, baby boomers. They are passing on. And that we're talking folks who have lived a long and vibrant life and in the process have acquired a lot of assets that we don't consider. And I don't look at that car. I know that my mother's driving that car. I don't think about it as an asset, but it's an asset. And all of these issues, I'm sure, involve titles and distribution issues. So, it's something that we kind of take for granted quite often.
No doubt about it. And, you know, that's why it's so important right now to be proactive, you know, rather than reactive. And so when I get those calls and I get those texts from friends, family, clients saying, "Hey, let's revisit these issues," you know, it's one of those good feelings because it's like, okay, good, you're being proactive. We're going to make sure we don't run into problems that we've seen so many individuals run into, you know. So let's talk about the basic estate planning documents, Lockwood. Number one, people are most familiar with the last will and testament, mm-hmm. all right? And then number two, we've got a durable power of attorney, okay? And then number three, we've got a health care power of attorney and a HIPAA release corresponding documents. And then we have a living will last but not least.
Okay.
So let's start with the last will and testament. I think most of our listeners, if I say will, you know, they immediately think of, okay, that's who is going to receive my estate.
Distribution.
Yeah. And that's very critical because bear in mind, Lockwood, if you do not have that last will and testament, then it's up to the state of North Carolina to decide where your assets are going to go. And guess what? The state's default rules may be the furthest thing from someone's reality of where they want to leave their assets. Mm-hmm. So it's vital because it's vital to at least get that document done. There's also, even if you have a very straightforward family life, okay, well, I've got, you know, a spouse, two kids, very straightforward. Well, it's important to have these documents in place because the documents serve to do various things, you know, waive bond for an executor, put someone in charge of your estate who you want to be in charge, whether it be a beneficiary or otherwise. So it's critical because it gives you the control of where you want your assets to be left when you're no longer here, and then who you want to be the one to divvy up those assets to make sure that the law is followed and that your intentions are upheld.
Right.
So those are the critical things that a last will and testament does. It does not leave it up to chance. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen so many of these. I know we talk about these celebrity stories, you know, on the show very often where we say, okay, let's see what celebrities have done right with their estate plan and let's see what they've done wrong with their estate plan. And the ones that typically end up doing the wrong thing, Lockwood, are the ones that just simply do not have a will, like a Prince situation, where we had brothers and sisters and nieces and nephews and uncles and various things coming out of the woodworks to say, "I want a part of that estate. I want, you know, I want a piece of that pie," so to speak. You know, and those are the tragic circumstances that we get sometimes in our office where someone comes to us and says, hey, I just lost my spouse, or I lost my mom and dad, and they didn't have a last right. will and testament. And we start having to go, okay, well, let's start talking about who the heirs of that estate will be. And sometimes it can have tragic consequences because of just various things. I mean, we have certain situations where we have estranged children. Right. You know, we have substance abuse issues that we can't protect those individuals mm-hmm. because we didn't set up the proper planning. Sometimes we have a blended family
right.
where we've got a stepmom or a stepdad now having to deal with the deceased individual's biological children, and that always is an interesting, complicated dynamic.
Suddenly you discover you had family members you didn't know anything about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's just so important. You know, the last will and testaments, you know, while it seems like a lot of people, that's maybe fairly simple, it's just so important to have it.
Right.
I mean, it just really, really is. So I think everyone understands that, and that's something that everyone needs that tool in their toolbox.
Right.
All right. Durable power of attorney. All right, what does that mean, Andrew? That's a long saying. Durable power of attorney is what we call a financial power of attorney. It's who would handle your financial affairs if you're unable to do so, okay?
Right.
So you're appointing an agent, and that okay. agent is going to act on your behalf. You are the principal, okay? And that individual must be very trustworthy, as you can imagine, because they're going to step into your shoes, Lockwood, and pay your bills, manage your assets, basically do anything that you can do to take care of your financial well-being. So it's very, very critical to have this document. And I'm going to get into why, if you don't have this document, what happens. But it's very critical to have this document and to make sure that that individual that you appoint to make these decisions on your behalf is completely 100% above reproach. I mean,
high integrity and skilled.
Correct.
Okay.
High integrity and skilled. That's the best way to put it and say that, look, we need this individual to be able to be trusted because they're going to have a lot of power and a lot of access, and you got to trust them basically implicitly.
What happens if I don't have a durable power of attorney?
Here we go. You want the court in your life.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because if you don't have a durable power of attorney and something happens to you, let's say you get into an accident. Let's say you have a medical emergency,
coma.
Okay. Anything like that happens, Lockwood, and now you're incapacitated and can't make your own decisions. If you do not have a power of attorney, for someone to be able to make decisions on your behalf, there is one route and one route only, and it's called a guardianship in North Carolina.
Okay.
And a guardianship is basically where you go before the clerk of court and you state that this individual is incompetent. Unfortunately, in this scenario, what you said, due to accident or medical issues, and someone needs to make decisions on their behalf. And guess what? There's a statutory preference as to who that might be, i.e. spouse, then kids. But you don't have the say-so into who that individual is going to be. The clerk of court is going to make a decision as to who they believe is in your best interest to make your financial decisions.
Okay. Am I to understand that there is a hierarchy? In other words, under this circumstance, the court would first go to maybe the spouse.
Yes.
Then maybe a child.
Yes.
In the process, you have an individual who's first in order or second in order, let's say the spouse. But the spouse has certain restrictive capacity. I'll use that description. Any number of things.
Yeah.
They just don't have the skills.
Yep.
High integrity, but they just don't have the skills. They can't keep paperwork. They can't even pay bills on time. What happens in that instance? Is there a way to say, okay, the spouse is not capable. We now move to a child, and the children may not be capable.
Correct.
Either. So what's the procedure for that?
It's just discretion of the clerk. So the clerk, the individual that petitions for the guardianship says who they believe should be appointed. You have a guardian ad litem. So an individual to represent the person who's now infirmed and say what they believe is in the individual's best interest and who the person should be to take over these financial roles. But, you know, again, Lockwood, you're leaving this up to chance because you're leaving it up to a clerk of court and a guardian ad litem to try to make your decision that you can make because we can get you a power of attorney done and you can decide who you want to fill that role. And guess what? you're not going to go through a court process right. in that case. Whereas if you don't do the durable power of attorney, if we don't get that appointment made, your only option is the guardianship court proceeding.
Okay. In the durable power of attorney, when I'm pointing
the agent.
Okay. Can I also point agent number one, agent two, three, and four?
Yes.
Okay.
Say alternates are fine.
Okay.
You can say this individual. So let's just, your scenario was the spouse just really, they're having some issues.
Right.
So let's say you named your spouse, but they're having issues. You can name a backup.
Okay.
You know, and maybe that's your child or one of your children. And that individual would then be the one to serve.
All right. I know we've got two other items to cover
yeah.
if we have the time, but I want to go back to this issue of the durable power. And by the way, I walk in, I get my will. I'm guessing that these four items are also going to be part of the discussion as
you
I'm
better
preparing
believe
the meal.
It. Yeah. Okay. I normally tell people when you come in, and let's just say you come in for, a lot of people come in for just the durable power of attorney, for example, okay. or just the will. And what we do is we say, look, we need to look at your other documents
gotcha.
Because if we're going to do this document for you, we want to be consistent with some of the roles, the agents, the executors. We want to make sure we're being consistent there. We also want to make sure that you have these other documents because a lot of people don't know they even exist sometimes.
Okay.
So it's important to, we call it an estate plan, Lockwood, because you got to have each and every component in place to make sure the plan is going to be successful.
All right. I don't want to belabor this so we can get to the health power attorney because
yep.
It's always something I'm confused by. But as a child, I know that my mother is not able or my father is not able to take care of my my other parent's needs. But yet my parent has been, the other parent has been named as the agent.
Yeah.
What do I do?
Yeah. So if you know that, then the best thing to do is if you can talk to the individual's doctor, I mean, that's a great thing
okay.
to say, listen, because most of the time you're going to need a letter from a doctor just
okay.
saying that this individual unfortunately can't handle these affairs on behalf of your mother or your father.
Right.
And if you can do that, that's great. If not, then unfortunately it's going to have to be a tough conversation with mom or dad to say,
okay.
Mom, Dad, you know, I really think you might need to just resign if they'll sign the dotted line and say that, look, you don't want that responsibility. And honestly, Lockwood, a lot of times being up front and speaking to someone, they probably already know in the back of their mind that there's an issue there anyways. And if you come to them and you're very up front and you say, look, I don't like talking about these things, but we have to talk about it because
okay.
Dad needs help, Mom needs help, and unfortunately, you need help.
Right.
And sometimes just kind of, hitting the...
okay, so this has happened in the past.
Oh, yeah.
All right. How do I distinguish between a durable power of attorney and a health power of attorney?
Yeah, good question. So healthcare power of attorney, Lockwood, durable power of attorney is who makes your financial decisions. Healthcare power of attorney, who's going to make your healthcare decisions if you're unable to do so?
Could they be two different people?
Two different people, no doubt about it. So some people have an acumen for finances and other people have an acumen for healthcare decisions. And so, you know, we talk about who would be best to suit these roles, and a lot of times it is different individuals. And the thing here is that if you can make your own healthcare decisions, Lockwood, you're going to make your own healthcare
right,
decisions.
Right.
It's in the cases where you can't.
Like a coma,
like an accident.
Right.
We're rushing you into the emergency room. Who's going to make these decisions? It's who you appoint in your healthcare power of attorney. Otherwise, guess what? The state is going to be the one who dictates who gets to make these decisions for you, and that's never a good situation to be in, Lockwood.
And you mentioned HIPAA.
Yep, HIPAA. So one of the things that we've recognized very often is they're called the HIPAA stop sign.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times doctors or medical providers, I mentioned when we were talking before, I said maybe you can the doctor will talk to you.
Right.
Odds are they may not, but
right.
if you have a HIPAA release, guess what? They will talk to you because that way the individual is given permission to medical providers to speak to certain individuals relative to an individual's medical situation, medical records. And again, this could be worth its weight in gold in a lot of situations because that opens the channel of communication where
right.
then you would have access to your mother's doctor, for example,
right.
to be able to talk to them and say, I'm worried about Mom. Let's talk a little bit about this. And he can't say, privacy issues. So the HIPAA release is a very important document
okay.
as well.
And that's the fourth item?
That's the fourth item.
Okay. But, you know, there are some sad stories about that HIPAA release.
Yeah.
You can have everything up to that, but not have that HIPAA release. And that could really mess up the whole potential of providing coverage for a family or making determinations where the patient, does the patient stay in a long-term care facility or, you know, some other options.
The big thing about the HIPAA versus the healthcare is the standard. Okay. So the healthcare power of attorney standard is you can make your own decisions. If you're unable to make them, then someone else makes them, your designated agent. Under the HIPAA release, it's me giving you the right, even if I'm not infirmed, to be able to access medical information to help make decisions for what's best for the family.
I'm just sitting here thinking the health power of attorney, power of attorney, it's automatic. You need to have that HIPAA release.
Yeah, exactly. Got to have them all.
All right. Andrew Foster with us today, of course, with Life and Taxes at Harvell and Collins. And if you want to find out more, give them a call. 252 area code 726-9050, 726-9050. Go online to harvellandcollins.com. Spell out the word and, please, harvellandcollins.com. This is the time of year. Andrew, thank you very much for this.